Welcome, everybody, to episode 356 of WordPress Weekly for Wednesday, June 12th, 2019. I'm your host, Jeff Chandler, joined by Mr. John James Jacoby. How are you doing, sir?
Hello. Good. Great. How are you?
Doing pretty good. I'm on that health train.
I'm
choo-choo, baby. I'm rolling along. Although I cheated last weekend. I had some rums and cokes on Saturday, but that was it. I'm back on the health train. I'm drinking water again right here for the viewers. I'm not cheating on the show like I did last week.
It's good to be on that
train. I'm making progress.
It's a good train to be on. And you, as a connoisseur of trains, should appreciate the train that you are on, Jeff.
Yes, that's right. Just got to make sure it doesn't derail.
That's right. That happened by you, didn't it? Didn't a train derail in Ohio somewhere?
Yes. I also followed through and I made an appointment with the doctor for next Thursday to get my numbers. So I'm looking forward to that. Important. And I got some new glasses.
We were talking about that before the show. Glasses are important. We'll talk with Johnny a little bit about that later. But believe it or not, it really helps to see.
Well, it doesn't really help with the monitor that's right in front of me. Apparently,
are you nearsighted or farsighted, or what's your deal?
I need them for nighttime and to see things at a distance.
I see.
It's amazing how well you could see with new glasses. My other glasses, after 4 years, were just covered in scratches. And when the sun shone on them, it was refracting into my eyes. Yep. Now, when you go into I didn't know this, but nowadays they got this thing called Octomap. So when you go in, you used to get the puff blown into your eyes. But now you just stare into this machine and this bright green light, like alien thing. Takes a detailed picture of the back of your eye, and you can see the picture, and you can see all the details of your cornea and your retinal that's a different area of the body. But you can see veins and all that stuff, and I found out that my eyes are healthy pretty much. Good. Except for one spot in the vein, you can see there's blood that came outside the vein, and it could have been from the episode I had on Sunday, but she recommended I go see a doctor because it could be from high blood pressure. So I guess they could see all these different health things in your eyes before they actually turn up in the rest of your body. So I thought it was cool, and I hated that puff thing.
The puff thing is no good. Carrie really hates that too. And with being photophobic, the bright light just makes my eyes explode. I basically have to open the green my alien eye light. Yeah. With my fingers to keep it open because I can't stand the pain of the bright light in my eye. That was the first time. I mean, I was when I first got glasses, it was like 12 or 13 years old. That was when I learned what photophobia was. And I was like, I didn't know that everybody's eyes didn't like hurt excruciatingly in the mornings and have bright light and things. But, that's the same thing with the Octomap was like, oh, you have a slight astigmatism and one of your eyes, like, well, how else do you know that without them measuring and mapping it out?
Yeah, it was just cool to see my eye in that kind of detail.
Yeah, it's cool.
That was neat. So let's see here. We've got a lot to talk about today. It's more or less going to be a general conversation with a gentleman who is contributing, who's sort of in the trenches, contributing to different aspects of WordPress Core and various projects. His name is Johnny Harris. And he's been developing websites for over 10 years now. He is most known for his open source contributions to WordPress Core as maintainer of WordPress Multisite, as well as building and maintaining a number of key plugins. And I believe he owns and operates the agency spacedmonkey.com. Johnny, thanks for joining us.
Hey, guys. Hey,
and as I understand it, you're across the pond right now. What time is it for you right now?
It's 8 o'clock over here.
Oh, man. And you get that cool British accent. I love people who have accents on this show. I don't have one.
It makes me sound
like no, you don't, Jeff. We do fill the Midwestern accent quota of the show with Jeff and I. So it is refreshing to have somebody else that doesn't just sound like the two of us on the show.
Yeah, so let's start off with Johnny. How did you first get involved with WordPress? Tell us a bit about your origin story.
So I've been using WordPress since I think it was 1.5. I needed a blog for my personal stuff. This is like 2005, 2006.
Back when blogging was cool.
Yeah.
It's coming back, baby.
Was it ever really that cool? But I really wanted, and I was also obsessed with RSS feeds. So I wanted something that would generate an RSS feed for me. So I installed WordPress, and that was 15 years ago, and I kind of haven't looked back since. I did my degree in computer networking to be a sysadmin, like to be to build networks, and I was still doing all this WordPress stuff from the side and just loving it. And then when I graduated, I was like, right, I want to make a career out of this, which was probably the worst time to graduate because it was 2009 and it was the economic crisis and everyone closed all of their intern programs and everything was shut down. I was like really stressing out about it. I was unemployed for 6 months building WordPress stuff. And eventually an agency gave me a chance, but they didn't actually hire me as a WordPress developer. I was writing Java CMSs for the first 2 years of my career. And like, you get to understand the other side of it when you're building bespoke Java systems. And Java is really an unforgiving language. And like, I just kept saying to my bosses, like, come on, guys, like, there's this thing called WordPress. Like, all of this connecting to databases, templating, you know, the WYSIWYG, that's all just there. Like, you get that all for free. Like, let's do this. And they did not listen to me for the first 2 years, like, when I built these custom things. And eventually a client wanted a WordPress site, and they were like, okay, yeah, finally, we'll give this to Johnny to shut him up. And the build was, they spec'd it out to take 2 months to build, and I built it in 2 weeks. And then they were like, oh, we get why you were saying that this WordPress thing is actually something you do. And I like burnt through 2 years of their backlog in like maybe 4 or 5 months. And yeah, the agency massively took off after that. When I left, there was 12 developers working underneath me. And I was like 25. I was like, this is way too much responsibility for a 25-year-old to have. I'm like staying till 8 o'clock. My work-life balance is a nightmare. Like, hell no. So I started to get a new challenge. So I joined Time. So Time Inc. UK. At the time, the biggest magazine publisher in the UK, the parent company Time, obviously, as Time Magazine and a bunch of other stuff that you've probably read and heard of. And that was like out of the frying pan into the fire. Like, I went from like this small agency where I was like, thought I was like, yeah, I know what I'm doing. I'm doing custom post types. This is cool. And it was like, right. Now we have to like scale this to billions of requests, and you have to learn about Memcache clusters and sharding databases. And like, I like fully panicked. I was like, I'm a fraud. I don't know what I'm doing. So I like for 3 months locked myself away and like learned scaling, caching, like all these internals of WordPress, like so deeply. Just so I didn't feel like a fraud at work, basically. And then I was like, I probably should do something with this knowledge now. I've spent like 3 months of my life, eyes bleeding, just constantly reading all this stuff. And this was like 5 years ago. There's more resources online now about how to scale WordPress. But at the time, it was like, it was kind of secret sauce, like witchcraft and how you scale this stuff. And the project I was working on was a multi-site. At the time, like, multi-site was not in a great place. Like, it was a lot of inconsistencies and weird bugs, and you really had to like understand it and understand its quirks.
And this was back when multi-site was its own separate thing.
So this was 5 years ago. So this was like around, I think my first release I was contributing was like
It was probably merged by then. I think it was 2010 when they got merged together. So yeah, it was merged by then. It was still clunky and quirky and weird, but getting better. It was in a better direction, but yeah, not real great.
So I was like, I started going to the multi-site meetings, and like I was using a little known feature of multi-site, which is multi networks. Again, if you think multi-site was quirky, like add multi-networks on top of that, because it's this like massively hidden feature that, again, only me and John sort of know about and massively care about. But like one of my first patches was I think 2,000 lines of code, which most people's first patch is like a small, tiny little thing. And I didn't realize how big of a deal that it was that I added this. My first patch was this massive thing. Which was the network options is what it was the first thing I added. So you could call network options on different networks. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of got the bug from there. Like, I think my next big thing I did was the site query, site and network queries, added them into core. And like, yeah, like over the last like 3-4 years, massively rewritten chunks of that and just got rid of so much inconsistency and all these edge cases. And there's now unit tests for all this stuff. And yeah, multi-site is in such a better place. Now it's had a lot of love. Also, like Felix joined at a similar time to me. And we're both, along with John and Jeremy and the other British John, we're all been maintaining it. But it's such a massive component, and it's so important to so many people's businesses. Like, I mean, it's WordPress.com with 100 million blogs in it. But like, I meet people when I'm out and about, and it's like, oh yeah, I've got 100,000 blogs on my multi-site, and I'm like, I've never even heard of this. Like, it's people are using it to such an amazing scale. Like, and I use, they're not publicized because a lot of them are in the enterprise space, a lot of them in the education space, and they don't sort of publicize themselves as well as other sort of businesses that are using multi-site.
So was I on VIP when you were at Time? I don't remember much from that long ago anymore. Did we intersect when you were there working on that, or no?
No, I don't think I don't think so.
Because I can remember you. I can remember you using multi-site, and I remember seeing stuff come in from you from that long ago. But I don't remember from where that happened.
Yeah.
So one of the stigmas for WordPress, you know, since the beginning. No, we're talking about way back in the days of getting the dig effect, the Reddit effect, whatever effect there was, stumble upon, somebody stumbles your site, and your site would end up turning into a white screen of death. And WordPress developed this reputation back in the day that it was a terrible platform, that it didn't scale, that it couldn't handle massive traffic spikes. What can you say with regards to that stigma? Because apparently you've worked in an environment where that's obviously not true.
Yeah, so the big thing when I was working at Time was we were self-hosting it in AWS. So a lot of the times when people want to scale WordPress, they just sort of throw it at Automattic with their VIP platforms. You had VIP.
Install a cache and plugin, and that'll solve everything.
And again, that feeling of being a fraud, of not knowing how to scale WordPress properly. When people ask me about scaling and caching in WordPress, there isn't a single solution for it, is the honest answer to the question. Like, it's easy to say, oh, go install W3 Total Cache. It's like, but then that doesn't, a lot of time that doesn't really get to the root cause of where your problems are. And like all the tools that I've built, me and John have worked on LudicrousDB together, which is a plugin that allows you to spread your database tables across multiple database servers. I've built various caching plugins. The answer is you need to look at the traffic that's heading towards your site and understand where the pain points are and use very specialized tools to fix the problems that you have. You shouldn't just throw lots of servers at it. You shouldn't just install these generic caching plugins. You should really take the time to understand that, which is why a lot of the plugins that I have are not on the plugin repo, because I feel like they're more developer-y tools and they're all on GitHub, but they don't have a UI. They're not sort of for your average punter. They're for people that are really taking WordPress and pushing it to its limits. Mm-hmm. But I like WordPress has come a long way, and like now that we're on PHP 7, well, PHP 5.6 now and PHP 7, like we're going to start to see these leap forwards in the code quality and speed of these applications. I think that's going to be the biggest leap forward. And I feel like it's not just a thing that will affect developers using it. It will affect users that are using it, because they'll see that performance.
Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that initially surprised me is, and Matt showed this in one of his State of the Word presentations about the move to PHP 7 and how the performance increase. I mean, if you're like, for instance, the Tavern, was running an older instance of PHP, and we bumped it up. We talked to our web host. We had it bumped up to PHP 7. Whatever, and boom, you know, we immediately noticed an increase by doing nothing except upgrading PHP. It was a wonderful thing.
Yeah. I mean, getting PHP upgraded is something I've been really passionate about. There's a core team called a Core PHP, and I've been part of that for a while. We worked on the white screen of death protection. White screen of death protection was basically to allow us hosts to move upgrade users, and they could then handle issues, because lots of plugins were written with 5.2 in mind, and they could break your site. So the white screen of death might have seemed like kind of like a nice feature for users, which it obviously is, but it was primarily a prerequisite for us to move off PHP 5.2 to 5.6 and eventually 7.
It's interesting you bring it up, because, you know, for so many years now, we've been, you know, there's been so many people campaigning for WordPress to do something to use its clout to motivate these hosts to move the requirements of the sites running on WordPress to PHP 7. But it's very interesting you bring it up, that that the white screen of death and the site health protection mechanisms built into WordPress was actually sort of the safety net to allow hosts to get these sites upgraded.
Yeah, when we worked quite closely with the hosting companies to make sure those features would work well for them. I mean, for example, there's like a button to say upgrade your PHP version, and that's filterable. So the idea is that you know, the advice to update PHP by default takes you to the WordPress.org site, but it could be filtered to take it to your own custom marketing if you're on, I don't know, GoDaddy or something, and it would link to their custom page about this. So we massively had hosts in mind. And the secret is, like, hosts do want to be on PHP 7. Like, it costs them less to host it on PHP 7 because it takes less resources. And, like, it generally, it's a good thing for them, but it's the smaller hosts where it's a problem, because if, you know, in the the dark days before, you know, Docker containers and all these new shiny things we have now to manage multiple instances, a lot of web shared hosting is just literally a server in a back room somewhere, and it's not really making them, it's going to cost them more money than they would get to upgrade it. So they don't see any good reason to upgrade it, so it's going to cost them a lot of money to upgrade it. But with this tool, we said, right, we'll handle the fatal errors, so you have no excuse to not just literally just lift and shift everyone off onto new servers. It also is a massively user empowering thing. Like, it allows people to fix their own problems. And I think that's such a nice message for the community to be like, WordPress isn't this sort of secret sauce. You can work it out. Like, WordPress is inclusive. Like, I got into web development because I started mucking around building my own little blog, and I wanted a cool sidebar, and that's how I learned by hacking. And this white screen of death is that, because along with white screen of death, you get the recovery mode. The recovery mode allows you to it under the hood detects the plugin that plugin or theme that broke and pauses it for you, so you can log in, deactivate it, update it, do whatever you need to do, and fix your own problems.
Yeah, that's a beautiful feature, because for all these years, once you get the white screen of death, unless you have FTP access, you're SOL.
Yeah, you're done. And
so congrats to you and the team for putting that stuff together and getting it implemented into WordPress. Tell us a little bit about the sort of the implementation and maybe the thought process behind the health check and some of the tests that are involved. Did you work in that area?
A little bit. Yeah. So that was even more influenced by the hosts, and it's the idea of for those that don't know, there's a new screen in 5.2, and it basically does some sort of primitive checks to check your PHP version, your MySQL version. And then we have like a recommended version numbers and recommended configurations, and it will give you like a traffic light red, yellow, green of what is perceived as good. And that will, over time, will obviously change. One nice thing about that as well is it also has filters. So I hope going forward that plugins will also add their own health checks into that. So for example, like Jetpack, you have the Jetpack connection. They could easily filter in a is connected to Jetpack, or you know, plugins that you integrate with like Elasticsearch could have is the Elasticsearch connection working, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, we've already seen plugins like Jetpack implement their own set of tests into the site health check test area.
Oh, I didn't see that. That's awesome, though.
Yeah.
Like, you build these tools and you hope people are going to use them. But that's, yeah, that is awesome. I personally opened a ticket for 10 Ups Elastic Press because I want them to add a setting in there for that as well. That was part of all part of the rollout plan for PHP. And again, that was a prerequisite to try and help users. Jenny Wong and some other people have been running I can't remember what they're called, but they're like basically genius bars, but for people's websites at WordCamps to help do health checks. Happiness bar, that's what it is. I'm sure Genius Bar is probably copyright protected and Apple's going to come for us for that.
Well, this show will be taken off YouTube really quick.
They were doing that in person. And the idea was like, well, we can't fix everyone's website. We can't fix everyone's website because not everyone comes to WordCamps. So this really needs to be part of core. I wasn't directly working on that, but it was all part of the PHP upgrade plan.
Now, in that area of WordPress is nice because, especially when it comes to troubleshooting, because we usually would have to use some type of plugin in order to generate that information for us and then copy that and send it to the host or send it to whoever. Now it's just with the site check test. It's right there on a page in an easily digestible, readable format. I was running the test on a website on 5.2 after I upgraded. And it said my website came up to be about 78% healthy. So what I did was I installed a plugin that can disable tests, and it disabled all the ones I failed until I got to 100%, and I didn't have to worry about it.
That is not how that's supposed to work, Jeff.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I think I cheated on the test.
We're looking at hooking into it for Easy Digital Downloads, Affiliate WP, Restrict Content Pro, Sugar Calendar, all of those things, because each one of them has their own settings, tools, utilities, check-in kind of page that we use for support. Like, our support team really needs to know what versions of PHP or MySQL or anything else that they're running, and having to like re-roll that same UI into every single plugin to do that, to get that support info, has worked okay for a couple of years now. But everyone is really happy and looking forward to there being some built into WordPress core solution, because it sure beats having to re-implement that whole thing over and over again.
Well, it also just centralizes it as well. Like, I don't have to like dig around your settings panels to try and find it. Like, I know I go to that page, I can see it in one thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's going to be I foresee core doing more checks as well. I know the Gutenberg team are quite interested in having some checks in there to make sure that JavaScript could access the API, and so that that was working as well. So, yeah, there are more and more parts of core that will probably add those things in. So
the one thing that I want to try and use them for is like for plugins that are bigger, the BBs or EDD or and any of them that have custom database tables, is just to be able to defer or have some UI, some central place to be able to say that like an upgrade happened, or what version of a database is something on or in, because there were years where we didn't do database upgrades on bbpress.org simply because it would have taken so much time to re-index things on the users tables on wordpress.org, or things where like you kind of just had to know that it was pinned to a very specific revision or version to prevent those things from happening, because it didn't really make a whole lot of sense to expose that in a UI. But now that times have changed and there is a page now, It just makes a lot more sense to be able to plug those things into someplace that so people can stop tripping over it. So it is a really exciting feature.
Speaking of Gutenberg, what areas have you contributed to with the editor, and overall, what's your thoughts and opinions on this being the direction and future of content authoring in WordPress?
So I've contributed a few places. I've been mostly contributing to the RFCs that they have been putting out recently. I've also contributed a bit of code. Speaking of sort of messaging and stuff, one of the things, so like when one bug that really kind of annoys me is like when you click save and something goes wrong, all it says is update failed, and it gives you no information why it failed. But we have an API, and the API gives you a nice message of why it went wrong. So I want to return that to the user. And generally, I think messaging and error handling is something that Gutenberg could do a little bit better.
Cheating, huh? Sorry, anytime someone talks about error handling, that's just an easy one to bring out. But thankfully, the cheating on messages, for the most part, have been addressed in WordPress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Otherwise, yeah, one of the things I've been contributing to is the migration. There's plans to move widgets to blocks, and they posted an RFC about that. I've posted quite a lot about this publicly on Twitter. I'm not sure I'm a massive fan of the current direction they're going for. I don't think it really, like, the plan basically, if you didn't read it, was to when a user comes to the widget screen after the widget screen's been replaced by the new Gutenberg-based blocks, it will take the existing blocks and in the client migrate them to blocks, and then they can edit them via blocks. Each sidebar would be one post with lots of different blocks in it. I said, well, that kind of is kind of limiting, saving all of the widgets in one post. One of the things I was fighting for was saving each block in a single post, because once you have each, what was a widget as its own post, you have some really awesome stuff you can do with these new widget blocks. Like you can have revisions for each block, each widget. You can have authors, you can have scheduled blocks that appear in your sidebar. So you could have a block that appears on Christmas Day just says Happy Christmas, or you could have something that appears on Black Friday that here's an amazing deal. So I spent over 12 hours commenting on that RFC and posting comments. And
yeah, how'd that go?
the editor team said, there's too many comments on this, so we're just going to approve it and merge it. So I was like, well, and I was like, quite honestly, I threw my toys out the pram. I was really upset about that. I was like, well, that's 12 hours of my life just gone, like, bye. Right. And like, I don't understand when you have 181 comments on a pull request, what sane person says, yeah, that's good enough to merge? Seems legit to me.
It is a request for comments. It's an RFC. They're asking for feedback.
Yes, the crushing irony is that they didn't want comments on a request for comments.
Right.
we weren't expecting more than 100. I don't know.
to me, if I had 180 comments on a pull request, I'd be like, well, it's time to go back to the drawing board. Let's close this and come back with something that the everyone's going to be happy with, because clearly it's not. And like, just because I was seen as a bit of a troublemaker, that I'm constantly saying no, and that I can apparently come off as quite negative online. If you speak to me in person, I'm a really positive and happy guy. Like,
okay on the show.
Just because sometimes I'm on Twitter or on these pull requests or whatever, like seeming like I'm cranky, I'm not. And I love WordPress. I love the community. But like, I am also not afraid to say when there's something's not right. And I don't think the current plans for widgets to blocks is going to work for you know, somebody who's got a little blog. I've worked on sites that have had 400 widgets on them, 400 plus widgets on them. And in client migrations, like literally in the browser, moving that data across is just not going to work. Like when you're running
400 widgets.
Well,
I know.
I mean,
wow.
So
that's a lot of widgets.
The reason we had that was because we had lots of hub pages and you could build your own hub page.
Oh,
so each hub page had like 12 widget areas in it, and each one had 10 in, and you'd have like whatever, you'd build various different hub pages for different reasons. So yeah, you ended up with a lot of widgets and a lot of widget areas. So to manage that migration, we need tools to do that. We need WP CLI scripts. We need some sort of migration that happens in the, you know, on a WordPress upgrade and done in such a way that doesn't make your screen time out. So we need some sort of migration script that would run in the background. Unfortunately, WordPress doesn't really have a sort of background task thing that we can do that has these long running tasks, but we could do, for example, when the term split happened, that happened in chunks. So what it did was like it migrated 50 at a time on a scheduled task, and then set another scheduled event for 1 minute in the future, and did it like that, like leapfrogged until you were done. And that's probably how I would have done how I hope it would be done with the widgets to blocks migration. But again, it's all up in the air at the moment. I'm not really sure where that's been left. It was approved and wasn't actually merged. So I don't know what's happening with that.
For what it's worth, I read through most of your comments. I know you spent 12 hours writing them, but I spent probably an hour reading them because they're and it probably won't be too much of a surprise to the listeners that or people that know that, you know, Johnny and I both work on multi-site and spend a lot of time working side by side on different things, that I completely agree that, like, you left the comments that I didn't have to, like, it was nice to see that someone else was kind of thinking the same direction that I was thinking with it, because WordPress has posts, and posts are hierarchical if we want them to be, but we also have taxonomies and we have terms and term meta, and that's what you use to relate things together. If a sidebar is a term, then the widgets are posts. Like, it feels very obvious and linear that that is how you would do those things. And the problem and the frustration that I have with it is similar to the one that I have with Gutenberg storing each of the blocks in the one big blob in the content, is that we could have easily related these things together. But what happens is we have sort of a newer generation of contributors that are building software the way they know how with what's familiar to them, which is something that, frankly, I think most of us are guilty of at some time in our careers, of like, this is how I know how to attack this problem, and so I am going to solve this problem the only way I know how, which is really difficult to, like, stop someone from doing what they are going to do anyways. Like, if Jeff wants to have a cheat day, Jeff's going to have a cheat day, right? Nothing I can do about it. That is just what's going to happen. And so when there are people that, like, want widgets to work a certain way, they're going to ask for your feedback, but they don't, it doesn't, it's not going to change anything, because they want to solve that problem with the code that they wrote to solve a similar problem previously. Like, that's what I think, honestly, frankly, like, on my own stupid rant on the show, like, is what tends to separate, like thoroughly, deeply experienced problem-solving engineers from, like, people that are different at getting stuff done. Like, I like
implementers,
right? Well, and like Pippin and I have joked, because, like, Pippin is really good at shipping stuff, and then, like, that, like, successful things that people like and enjoy and thoroughly enjoy using. But then, like, you know, he has a staff of people that get to iterate on it and improve it and clean it up. And so there's also another part of me, like 50%, that gets that, like, them solving this problem this way is going to create 5 more years of work for other people to clean up what the first version of this was. And so, like, the nice thing about you leaving comments and having there be an RFC and posting those things is that people are able to take your thoughts and ideas and opinions, and you could do it yourself if you have the time, but anyone can take the ball and run with it. Like when this approach doesn't work anymore or doesn't scale or isn't really yielding the results that everyone had hoped for, at least you're able to dig through all of the history of the comments and be able to say, like, this is how we could have architected it, and we still should probably do that going forward. So, like, don't feel, hopefully, Johnny, like your comments aren't valued, because I value them. But I think that time usually tells that the right approach isn't always the hardest one or the easiest one. There is kind of an in-between. And so them shipping it and getting it done is their own version of moving the ball forward, and we can iterate on it and improve it over time. Same with multi-site, right? Like, multi-site got the job done. It made WordPress.com what it is. It made .org what it is. And we're able to live with it. We hate it maybe a little bit every once in a while, but we're able to live with it and then kind of improve it over time, which is something that, like, I struggle with. I like to take my time and build it right and get it right, but it doesn't. It's like one of the Linux philosophies. Like, it doesn't do anybody any good if people aren't using it. People got to be comfortable using it first. And then once it's popular and people are happy with it, you can always improve it at any point. So, but I appreciate you leaving those comments. I agree with you 100%.
I really do appreciate that. But, like, it's hard not to feel like I was doing that in a vacuum, like I was screaming into the void. Because, like, I got some people messaging me privately, and I felt like I was tweeting about it a lot and just going, this isn't right. Like, come on, guys. Can theme people get involved? Because this is directly affect them. I was really surprised by the number of people that just kind of sat back and went, yeah, let's let Johnny sort this out. Like, and I'm like, that takes a toll on me. Like, it was frustrating. And, like, when the Gutenberg team, who are nice people and I've spoken to them, are just saying no, 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 and not really even giving me a reason or feedback why, just because, you know, when all you've got a hammer, all your problems are nails, right? So they blocks work this way in post, so they should work the same way everywhere else. I guess I'm having the same argument again with navigation. So the navigation block, they're going to store all of those navigation items in HTML comments as a JSON blob. And then that navigation block will be the navigation for the site, because eventually everything will be blocks. That is not going to, again, I've worked on massive WordPress sites where you've had 200 menu items, massively nested, massively insane menus. That is not going to scale in HTML comments. The reason they're in HTML comments in the first place was backwards compatibility. It's not. No one thought, oh, this is a great way to do this as JSON comments. Like, in HTML comments, you can switch between the classic editor and Gutenberg without it being a problem. It's just a HTML comment. The classic editor just ignores it, and it's fine. But the second you try and take that weird backwards compatibility decision and then force it on other parts of core, it doesn't make any sense. Everything else is built as custom post types. You've even got stuff like the customizer chain sets. That's a custom post type under the hood. Like, everything is custom post types and taxonomies. Why are we breaking out of that paradigm? That's how we as developers use WordPress, custom post types.
Well, it drives me a little crazy too. I mean, like, I get that, like, the WordPress's database schema is not always necessarily the most flexible, even though I think, like, WordPress got a lot right. Like, not to be a spoiler for my own WordCamp Europe talk or anything, but, like, if it kind of feels like, instead of, like, the avoidance of building a proper database table to store all of this stuff has meant that it just gets, like, pre-compiled into a blob and thrown into the content. Like, it's kind of just like folks have given up trying, frankly. Like, this is kind of relatively simple database architecture for just designing something, then the way that you need to query it and store it, and then trying to build in some future flexibility if you need it. And, like, it's pretty flexible with taxonomies and meta and posts and everything. Like, it's kind of okay, but there are places where it just doesn't fit or it doesn't work. And so blobbing it all up and just saving it is one thing, and then iterating through all the text is like the worst case scenario. Like, there's no reason to have to do anything like that. And so, like, even the backwards compatibility part of it could be solved in other different ways. But, like, using the navigation, again, is in a blob of it, I agree, is just, like, it's kind of silly. But, you know, we'll be having a different conversation in 5 years when, like, everyone else catches up and understands that it doesn't work. And then we'll be talking about the new version of menu blocks and widgets and things where you have to migrate all the data and you have to chop all the blocks up into separate little data chunks and then save them someplace else. Like, it's just weird how and frustrating how, and like myself, like we've talked about this privately, like, you know, when you feel sort of alone, try like against the grain, like swimming against the current. And then you have a reputation for swimming against the current or for being a not a team player or for not being on board with the direction that things are going.
Like, this is what many, many people felt during the initial development of Gutenberg. They're contributing in the comments and they felt like they're going against the grain, that they're calling things out, that this isn't going to work. And typically we're met with no, it'll be fine. You just watch.
Mm-hmm. Or avoidance, right? Or frankly, like
yeah, I don't want to be continually told we'll sort it out later, right? Which is what that widget stuff was like. I'm like, but if you don't bake these decisions into your original decision process, you can't just solve them later. Mm-hmm. If you have all these pre-baked assumptions about how it's going to work, and you end up coding yourself into a corner, and you can't mm-hmm. get out of it. And that's how you end up like that. Like, and like, again, I don't want to come off as negative. I don't want to come off as this bad guy, but right. I love this project and I think it's important to the web and it's important to the world. So I will, you can paint me as a bad guy. You can call me, you know, negative or a dick or something. Like, it's fine. As long as the right result comes out of it and we come to it with data-driven decisions and not, I feel like this is the right decision.
Well, the thing that's interesting to me is that if you said that you feel like it's the right decision without any data, then no one would listen anyways. Like the fact that it's always on the other person or the opposite side to like prove someone else wrong is sort of like its own logical fallacy that you can't get out of. Like how it just seems a little silly that someone can feel a certain way and push something through. And then you constantly have to like do not only know that you'll have to do the rework, but like have to go through the like the painstaking process of like very detail orientedly going through someone's plan and telling them how it is wrong and then having them just do it anyways because they feel like it's right. Like, why even bother? Like, I get how you feel. Like when you do all that work and that research, and you try to explain to somebody or a team of people like what a different approach would be and they just don't do it or they don't respond to you at all. Like the hardest part is just being ignored when people just are avoiding talking to you about all of it. Like something should be said or responded back to you. But yeah, that's I'm sorry that you had to go through the process of like doing all the work and getting ignored. It's a bad deal.
And like I come to this like knowing quite a bit about widgets and how they scale, because mm-hmm. I was working on a ticket 3 years ago to move widgets to posts anyway, because mm-hmm. I was working on that site that had 400 posts. Things were starting to break. I did all this work and Weston has got a ticket that's nearly 3 or 4 years old now. We were looking at it like, I'm like your guy. Like it should have been like, oh yeah, Johnny knows what he's talking about. Like they should have sought me and Weston out about this. They should have looked at that ticket. But when they create the RFC, they didn't even know about that ticket because they're not looking on track. They're not looking through the backlog. And like, I get that they're new, but there's 15 or 16 years of history now that needs to look. And you need this. Like sometimes I refer to myself as a historian. Like mm-hmm. I have all this like because I went so deep in researching this stuff. I know why some of these decisions were made. And oftentimes I'll speak to you, John, of like, why did we do this? And mm-hmm. you'll dig out some random conversation on from 8 years ago on what were we using before Slack, IRC.
Yeah,
like, you actually did that once. I was like, dude, that's insane that you can do that. It's awesome.
It's insane that he would remember that that's where yeah. that was.
Bits and pieces, right?
So before we wrap it up here, so in light of all of your contributions to WordPress, your involvement in all these different projects, from what we've seen from the development of Gutenberg is, and also from what recently happened with Joost de Valk stepping down as the marketing lead of WordPress, but this mostly stemmed from what we've seen with the development of Gutenberg. Morten Rand Hendrickson and Rachel Cherry are starting a new project called the WP Governance Project to try and bring some governance principles to WordPress so we can have, let's say, a governing body. People are in certain positions. They're nominated or voted. We know what they're doing, what the responsibilities are for. What's your take on WP governance? Is it something you feel is necessary or needed at this point within the project?
So I've kind of been on a self-imposed mission recently to try and understand how decisions are made in WordPress and how anyone gets anything merged into core. And it's funny what Joost said about assuming that there were these backroom conversations happening, that there's some sort of WordPress gods that are sitting there, perhaps laughing maniacally over a globe with a cat, really, you know, plotting how WordPress is going to do.
And like, which unfortunately a lot of people out there believe and think that that's how things get done in WordPress.
And but then it's funny that people talk to me and sometimes they think I'm part of that. They think that I'm one of these like these WordPress gods that doesn't exist. All of these, like a lot of this stuff happens, all of our multi-site meetings happen in public. We publish a roadmap in public. Everything happens in public. Sometimes I have private conversations with people, but it's more just for expediency sake. And then I will write up what we talked about in the ticket. Like, I strongly believe in transparency. My big thing is we should be more transparent and be more trying to tell, give people roadmaps and ideas of where we're going. And I think what Matt's done with the focuses is actually awesome. It's like, right, now we have gold, you know, a goal to head towards, so we can all focus ourselves. I mean, I don't always necessarily agree with those goals. As the multi-site maintainer, I want all the things to be multi-site and we fix multi-site. But and that's a question. That's a comment I made to Matt. Like, can we try and do some other things that aren't just editor based? But I do think we need a bit of governance. I just think transparency is important, and putting more stuff on the make blog with detailed explanation of why decisions were made. It feels like we just communicate the decision, but not why it was made. Because anything you do, you can do it in code. You can do it an infinite number of ways. Sometimes I've put this is the decision we're making, personally hating it, thinking, oh, this is rubbish. Like, I don't like this decision, but it's the right decision. And our blog posts maybe are probably too positive of like, this is the right solution, everything's fine, but it's not. Like, this is the sucky solution that we've got, but we did it for these reasons. And I personally, I'm using Twitter and I'm just going like, here's what I'm working on. Like, give me pull. Yeah, this is what I think is important. And I think we as core developers should be using our blogs, we should be using Twitter to communicate what we're doing and what we think is important. We should also like try and take feedback from, like, I go to a lot of WordCamps and I just like ask people like, what do you think is missing in WordPress, and try and get their feedback, because we're WordPress is so focused on being user-centric piece of software at the moment. I think it's discounting developers, and it's making developers' life a little bit harder because we're constantly going, well, the users first. I'm like, well, developers are also users. And if you give developers awesome tools to build awesome stuff, they will make great experiences and great plugins for users. So helping developers helps users. And I feel like the constant argument I'm having is like, but we need, like, we should, like, making blocks should be easier than it is. Like, AFC has done some amazing, ACF, sorry, there's some amazing stuff around these PHP-based blocks, like, freaking game changer. I wish that was what version one of Gutenberg was. So we have this massive infrastructure of blocks, but unfortunately it's all ES6 and React, and people had to massively upskill themselves.
Everybody seems to be using these different tool sets to create just their builds or their layouts just to be able to get to the point where they can make a block.
That could be its own show, because that bothers the heck out of me right now. Not only just build tools, and not only everybody using frantically different stacks to try and get the job done, but like, as much as I am super happy for all of our friends at WP Engine that just shipped DevKit, we're sort of reinventing browser wars all over again for ourselves, where we have like all of these different local environments, all these different ways to like ship or write a WordPress site or plugins or themes. Like, WP CLI has a plugin scaffold, it has a theme scaffold, we have underscores, like we have these, we spend all this time trying to boil something down to the bare ingredients of a thing, and then once we do it, we just start all over again, and we haven't learned anything. XML RPC finally gets most of its coverage, and we ditch it for a REST API. We get REST mostly filled in, and it'll probably be GraphQL that replaces it. Like, there is something that, like, is just very human and like infinite about the way that we all kind of try to resolve and solve and solve again the same problem that was already solved before us. We've had MAMP. MAMP has Xdebug. It has PHP unit. You could just use it, but everybody ends up reinventing something to solve a very specific or address a very specific need. Period of time where there is some tool or multiple tools to choose from, and they all are like 79% awesome and like 21% painful, and then everyone kind of deals and figures out what the pain is, solves that problem, and by the time you've gotten there, there's some brand new thing that's 79% awesome again that you're stuck with. Like,
there's plenty of problems that aren't even solved, like importing and exporting data in WordPress.
Right.
Exporting a XML file that, if you've got more than like 1,000 posts in it, it's going to barf and die and not really give you any error message. You get a white screen or my new shiny fatal error message. moving your site from one host to another, if you're a non-technical person, is a freaking nightmare right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's plenty of problems we haven't solved. And if you look at the project, like, oh yeah, it should be, this 16-year-old piece of software should be easy to move from one host to another, but I can't. And there's like tons of like weird gaps in the WordPress ecosystem. I'm like, oh, why is this difficult? Like,
mm-hmm.
And like, we're focusing on like, oh, you can preview your YouTube videos when you move the blocks up and down. Great. It's like, but there's just, but then I can't move my post from A to B. Like,
right.
What? That's nuts, you know.
Do you have, and Jenny, have you done any work on Drupal maybe recently, or have you been monitoring Drupal? Because from what I've seen from their development process, they've seen have gone developer centric first, building all these awesome kind of developer toys and tools into there first, and now we're starting to see. It was just released. Sarah Gooding wrote about this earlier this week in the Tavern about Drupal Gutenberg 1.0. It's not ready for production sites to be used out in production, but it seems like Drupal has gone the way of developers first, then users. And, you know, I've always been wondering, are we ever going to see the tides change where the developers start creating all these nice user experiences and other things in Drupal where they start to overtake WordPress and market share because WordPress maybe doesn't have the developer first mindset?
Yeah. I mean, I haven't used Drupal recently, but I was at an open source day where we had Joomla, Drupal and WordPress people all working together on various different stuff. And it was really cool to talk to the different communities. One tool the Drupal team had, which is friggin' awesome, was, so when you submit a patch to Drupal, still patch files, but you can click a button, it will spin up a little server that lasts a day with the latest version of Drupal or whatever you specify and apply the patch to it. So I don't need to have some janky VVV local dev environment set up. I can literally with my just a browser, start testing patches. And like, can you imagine if we had that for WordPress? Like, go to contribute today, and all you need is a laptop with a web browser. You can bring a little Chromebook or your iPad with you, and you can start testing patches for us. You can test translations. You can test CSS changes. Like, that'd be friggin' awesome. Like WordPress needs to massively improve its tooling, because like, if you've ever dealt with Track, it's a nightmare, and it's the thing that like when I think about this project, I'm like, I love it, but the thing I hate the most about it is Track and dealing with that awful interface, uploading patches, having to manually run unit tests. Like, no, it's 2019. We've got better tools. Like, please, like, and when Matt says, oh, when people ask him whether we're going to get rid of Track, it's like, oh, it's not a priority. I'm like, how is encouraging thousands of people to contribute not a top priority for the project? I don't understand. Like, we're really focusing on moving. Like, it's more important than anything else is to get off of that and having nice tooling to make it easy for people to contribute from home or in contributor days. And yeah, if WordPress doesn't step up its game, it will lose market share.
You heard it here first, folks. I thought it was going to be maybe this year because of Gutenberg, but I don't know. It seems to be inching upwards ever so slightly. So with that, I guess, John, I'll leave my John. I don't want to get confused here. I'll leave it up to you to have final last words, and Johnny, I'll let you do anything you'd like to mention or talk about. And be sure to tell us where we can follow you and keep tabs on you. And we'll send you on your way.
I don't really have any questions for Johnny, because I can ping him anytime I want to.
We've
talked a lot about different things. So I don't know. I guess just on the show, I want to say that I appreciate you. You work hard. You spend a lot of time working on a lot of different things. Oh yeah, there's a heart right back at you. There you go.
Thank you for your contribution, sir.
Yeah, it's not always easy, and there maybe aren't always a lot of pats on the back or a lot of thank yous. But it's worth it in the end. And it's nice to know you. It's nice to have you as a friend. It's good to see you on the show. And I'll see you in Europe.
Yeah, man.
All right. So, Johnny, where can we keep tabs and follow you? And will you be, obviously, I guess you'll be at WordCamp Europe.
Yeah, I'll be at WordCamp Europe. You'll find me at the bar, probably. you can follow me on Twitter, The Space Monkey. I'm Space Monkey on GitHub and spacemonkey.com. I blog about very, very developer-focused things. So if you want to really nerd out, read some of my blog posts. Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys.
Well, I wonder how many people out there are listening to Johnny Harrison just going like this. You know, they're just nodding their heads. But you know, the good news is that we've seen that Josepha Hayden was brought on board earlier this year. She's kind of like the executive director in front of Matt. She's trying to wrangle everybody, ensure communication between the teams. She's trying to, it almost looks like she's setting up a governance within WordPress. When you start looking at the way things are progressing, and we're looking at eventually trying to at least get people to be able to submit patches through GitHub. That would be a step in the right direction for a lot of developers. You know, there's things afoot, but geez, you know, everything's slow going when you power a third of the web, I guess. you need manpower, I guess.
I spoke to her for
people
about,
power. Sorry,
I spoke to her for about 2.5 hours. WordCamp London. Yeah, I've got a lot of time for her. She's maybe not publicizing all the stuff that she's doing, but she's working so hard. I can't wait for her to start talking about some of the stuff that she's doing.
Oh man, we got to get her on the show, John.
Yes, we do.
Right after, we're going to get around after WordCamp Europe. You know, give everybody a week or two to decompress, because there's going to be a lot of awesome stuff coming out of WordCamp Europe. Well, Johnny, thanks a lot for spending your evening with us here, and thank you for listening to the show. And there you go. Johnny Harris of spacedmonkey.com. It was great just to have him on. It was just a general conversation about from somebody who's in the trenches working on various projects, things that they're encountering. And there you have it, John. And obviously, you know what he's going through because you talked to him. But
talk a little bit about it. It's you know, we have a lot in common, a lot of different things, experience, perspectives, ideas on the directions things should go. And so, you know, it's important to you know, be supportive, have friends, all that stuff. It's good.
So a couple things I wanted to get to before we wrap it up here. The first is that yesterday WordPress was borked, and if you visited TechCrunch, 9to5 Mac, or any of the other large websites that were on VIP Go, you would have seen the 2019 theme and a beautiful potted succulent plant header image. If you went to Gizmodo.com, it was they had a pretty funny write-up about this and a gallery showing all the various different websites with showing the featured image of the succulent, which turns into a little bit of an internet meme, I suppose. They were running into issues across their containers, apparently, based on their systems blog, and some of the theme files were missing, causing these themes to revert back to the default theme, and some of these sites were showing 503 or 500 errors for the better part of 3 hours, but eventually they got things figured out, and these sites look as good as new. But it was interesting. It was an opportunity to actually see what the 2019 theme looks like on some very content-heavy websites. Mm-hmm. And it didn't look all that bad. But you could tell that their sites were heavily coded and optimized and configured for the themes that they were using.
Obviously. I'm looking forward to the VIP team's detailed wrap-up post.
Yeah, the incident report.
The incident report will be really important because they spread themselves a little bit thin on their own blog and on Twitter. And so you kind of got a circular dependency of trying to figure out like what had happened and who was working on what and whether or not things were fixed. You got pushed to Twitter and Twitter told you to go to their blog and then their blog told you to go to Twitter again. And I was like, how do you keep up with what's happening here? So the incident report, I think, will be very valuable. But this is really WordPress.com's or VIP's only like second actual kind of outage in for basically ever. So at least this got fixed in 2 hours, give or take.
About 3 hours.
Hours.
About 3.5 hours. I know because a lot of my clients are hosted on VIP Go. So that was a fun evening for me.
So do you know anything that we don't know, Johnny?
I do, but I
okay, there's an embargo. I get it, it's fine.
I know a lot of people that work at VIP Go, and I don't want to throw shade their way. It's hard to host those big sites, so
yes, it is. Yes,
and it is. As John James Jacoby mentioned earlier, WP Engine has launched DevKit. I want to give a shout out to Chris Wegman and Jason Stallings, who have been working on this for the past few years. DevKit is a WordPress local development environment that includes SSH gateway access, push and pull deployments to WP Engine. Of course, you'd have that because it, you know, works exclusively with WP Engine, although it can work independently of the host as well. You get PHP MyAdmin, WebGrind, Varnish, HTTPS proxy, Genesis framework, WP CLI commands, which is also exclusive to DevKit because WP Engine acquired StudioPress a few months back. Currently, DevKit's user interface is command line only with plans to add a GUI later this year. You could sign up and test it out in the open beta. It's available for Mac and Linux. And so you can sign up on their sign-up page. And one thing I noticed is that, so I started thinking about this. So WP Engine has DevKit. Hey Flywheel, or Flywheel has Local by Flywheel, Local. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know, I guess it's not a bad idea if you're a web host, if you can create or purchase this local development software, have it tied, have it have some features where it ties specifically into your site for staging, deployments, push and pull technology. But then I was thinking, what if you're a developer, you're a client or a consultant, and you're managing various client sites and you have some that's on Flywheel, some that's on WP Engine. Now, what do? You have 3, 4, 5 different local environments that you use to manage their sites, or do you just house everything on one environment and hope for the best?
That's what I was hinting at earlier, and you're right. You're probably stuck having all of them installed. Like the nice thing, like Johnny kind of alluded to earlier, is that most of these tools, and I think DevKit is probably one of the first, that really is just relatively lightweight and kind of nicely containerized, where you're not necessarily running everything in its own VM like you do with Local by Flywheel or some of the others. Like, this is just everything kind of nice and neat in its own container. And like, you know, don't get me wrong, earlier in the show when I brought DevKit up, is like, I am happy to see these tools and I love all the people that work on them equally. It's just like you said, Jeff, it's a weird future where you've got all of these things installed. I mean, our poor battery lives on all of our laptops are just
look at this Swiss Army knife. It has every tool is a different piece of software that installs a local environment.
Well, and like
specific to the host that my client is on.
It's like the infinite loop of like mono repos and microservices. You build something that has everything like MAMP and everyone hates it. And then you build something small that's very specific like VVV or Local by Flywheel. And then people love it for different reasons. And then a bunch of stuff gets added to it. And then somebody comes out with something smaller again. Like DevKit's cool. It didn't work for me, but I was also like a bad user and didn't file a bug report. So I have to dig into it a little bit more. But I've been using Local from the folks at Flywheel for a while. It's been really great. So I'm excited to test out DevKit some more once it's hopefully working for me. And they don't mention it anywhere, and I will mention it on the show, is that amongst all the things that it does include, Xdebug, PHP MyAdmin, all the things, they included Varnish, which I thought was a little weird for that, but it's okay. And then they don't mention it, but it does include PHP Unit. So for folks that do want to try using DevKit for their own plugins or theme development and running their own unit tests, that PHP Unit is included in DevKit.
I wonder how well this works on Windows, though.
So it doesn't work at all right now on Windows.
I don't. Yeah.
So they don't have an open beta available. It's just for Mac and Linux right now.
So the reason why VVV still uses Vagrant, which is pretty old tech at this point, is Windows support. Mm-hmm. And take it from someone who's gone to a lot of contributor days. Setting Macs and Linux machines up takes minutes. Setting up VVV on Windows is what takes the morning for me.
Mm-hmm.
And like, a lot of people can't afford to buy a Mac, so we do have to still support these users. And it's a hard problem to solve. Like, I would love a Dockerized development environment that the WordPress core team supports and we can do, but like, supporting Windows has been the nightmare for it.
For multiple years, when VVV would be a problem, or if you're at a WordCamp and everyone else is clogging the network because they're all trying to download the same virtual machine or whatever else, and just pulling down some enormous file to try and get everything working, I would literally just go straight back to MAMP Pro. Like, there are times where you can easily just have a local environment and use MAMP, and MAMP is perfectly fine. But you know, when you're working in modern stacks and more complex kind of environments, then it does make sense for you to have a dedicated tool for that. And like, the VVV was one of those projects that is very close to my heart, even though I didn't really contribute a lot to it. I used it nonstop, every day, all day long, for multiple years for a while there. And but it's always been something that required a little bit more attention than I wanted to give it. And so it's like seeing DevKit, knowing that Chris and the folks are behind it, I am excited to try it, and hopefully in a working state for me.
And last but not least, BuddyPress 5.0 development began in about December of 2018. Let's see, and this was after 4.0 was released in November. Apparently, the BuddyPress core team has not published a roadmap for what will be coming in 5.0, but features and fixes added so far could be found on GitHub. And one of them is the BP BuddyPress Nuevo template pack will use the same password control that is used by WordPress. So BuddyPress users will be able to set their passwords using WordPress's interface on the registration page and on the user's general settings page. So by default, BuddyPress will generate a strong password, but the user can still edit it if necessary. If the user selects a password that is too weak, the submit button will be disabled until the user confirms they want to proceed by checking the check box.
It's nice to have that back in there. Like, well, one, I should say,
well, where to go?
It's nice to it's nice to have IMath back working on Bloody Press again, because he took a little bit of a hiatus for a while. I think everyone kind of comes and goes as they they have ideas for what it is that they want to see in Bloody Press, or the direction that they want it to go. And even like Johnny said earlier, we went the route of having it be a developer playground for a little while. But the user-facing things are the things that help people feel like there's life in the project. So when the password, the generate password UI that's everyone is familiar with now, that's in the WordPress admin dashboard on your profile page, a lot of folks put a lot of time and work into that. And then myself and Mark Jake with kind of in the last 4 or 5 days before it shipped, quickly kind of tried to improve a few little things with it. So there's an "Are you sure?" if you don't save the form. And then we pulled it apart and abstracted it so that it could be used or reused by something like Bloody Press. So it was a long time coming for this to eventually get pulled into Bloody Press and for it to hit the release. And so leave it to IMath to pull that in. He worked on spent a many months working on BP Nouveau and getting the new template pack and everything working. So there's anybody that can pull that in and make it happen, it's definitely him and Ray. I think both worked on this pretty closely. So and yay, 5.0.
If anyone out there has actually used the BP templates, BP Nuevo, JS Password, Verify.js template, it is scheduled to be deprecated and deleted in Bloody Press 6.0. So developers will want to take note if using the BP Nuevo Password Verify script as a dependency for custom password control implementations. Bloody Press 5.0 will also add BP specific debug info to the site health info screen that was introduced in WordPress 5.2. So it looks like meetings for the project have been a bit sporadic. 5.0 is expected at the end of May, but it looks like a new timeline might be discussed in the next meeting, which is tentatively planned for today.
It is planned for today. The dev chats happen when we record the show, so it's not easy for me to make them.
I'm sorry, John.
It's okay. I also realize now that usually when we record the show is when the UPS and the FedEx delivery guys come through the neighborhood. And so we might have to change that because the dogs bark and like doorbell rings and stuff. And I have to mute myself, which,
but I love Penny and Paul on the show. It's like a special appearance. Too,
but my Paul barks so loud that in everybody's ears, you know, we should come up with an alternative. I think maybe figure it out. But everyone was talking in the dev chat today. Renato has been working on BP CLI, working on BP REST API. There's lots of stuff that's happening under the hood. So 5.0 is kind of the beginning of a lot of that.
And BP Press, it still has a heartbeat. I hear it.
It does. Yes, it
does. So BP Press is still alive and well and out there. BP Press is
stable and running out there. I actually just somebody just submitted a patch and I fixed a bug the other day with the favorites repair tool. So thank you for contributing to making BB Press better.
All right, so that's going to do it for today's episode. Next week, Malcolm Peralti is going to sub in for John James Jacoby, as he will be on his way, or he might even already be in Berlin for WordCamp Europe, a big event that's going to take place next week. By the way, it will be live streamed for free, so if you're not able to make it, be sure to check out the WordCamp EU website for details on how to watch register for the live stream. That's going to do it for this episode of WordPress Weekly. You find show notes for this episode and all other episodes on wptavern.com. And you can follow me on Twitter. You can follow my health train journey to see if it derails at JEFFR0. And John?
Follow me on Twitter and GitHub at JJJ or JJJ.blog. And if you'll be at WordCamp Europe, I'll be giving my talk at 11 a.m. on Friday. Advanced database management for WordPress plugins. So come hang out. I'd love to see you there.
Awesome. And you'll be now, you're you're working for me. I want you to do a WordCamp EU wrap up when you get back.
I told you I would. I don't know right. why, but I told you I would.
So you kind of have no choice. Have to.
All right. I don't have a choice.
So everybody enjoy the rest of your week. We'll talk to you again next Wednesday afternoon. Say bye, John. Say bye, everybody.
Bye, John. Bye, John.